This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 12. Wow, I just had the most inspiring conversation with Laura Wright, my guest on this episode of the podcast and the blogger behind the much adored food blog, The First Mess. This statement from Laura's blog communicates who Laura is so well. My thing this year is just recalling those moments where I've been so excited to just live and feel like my most optimal self, and then just hanging on to that elated goodness with everything I've got. That recollection process helps keep my priorities and choices for wellness in check. What a beautiful statement. I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast. Thank you for listening to another episode. This is a good one. I think you'll really enjoy it. I literally had a smile on my face the whole time I was talking with Laura. You can hear the passion and excitement in her voice the whole time, and it was truly infectious. She so eloquently speaks to many of the things I hold most dear, things like finding joy in the seasons and the bounty they produce, and holding the process of harvesting, preparing, and eating food close to your heart. That connectedness for her is just a part of her. Deep at her very core. She's inspiring to me to the 10th degree. Her blog, The First Mess, is renowned for its real, honest approach to eating healthfully. It's hard not to be a fan because Laura is truly pursuing her passion in life, and it shows in everything she does. Just browse the recipe section of her site and read what she writes to preface each recipe. Her approachable manner makes her feel like a friend, and like she truly gets you, and like she knows that sometimes we all cave and eat pizza, and that is more than okay. She talks about pizza a lot in the episode, actually, and knowing that she's a pizza and beer-loving girl makes her all the more awesome in my books. We talk about all of this and so much more in the episode, so if you love food, but more than that, if you believe in its essence, the life-giving qualities of it, and if you love cooking, then settle in, because this episode is for you. Here's Laura. Okay, Laura, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm really excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a huge honor. I'm a huge fan, Laura, seriously. I'm a front runner. But, you know, I was really excited to have you on the show for that reason. But also, I feel as though you truly get it. You know, for you, it doesn't seem like eating healthfully is a chore or even a lifestyle choice, if that makes sense. It's just something that's at your very core. You know, the essence of food, of its seasonality, the process and ritual of preparing and enjoying it, it just seems to come so very naturally to you. So rather than ask you more basically how you were raised, I want to know instead when your awareness of and your relationship with food began.
Well, it is, like, I am glad you said all of those things. I would say, like, I think really it's just been built. I don't think I have that aha moment. Like, my parents have a local kind of farm-to-table produce kind of market. So that seasonality and, like, that awareness that food in season just tastes so much better has been like built in from the beginning. Like, I just, if I had to point to one specific moment, my dad would sell the raspberries at his store in the summertime. They were everbearing, so we would get like two rushes of berries throughout the summer, and he would pay my brother and I $2 a pint for whatever we could pick that he could sell at the store. And I mean, I was just a kid. I was so distracted. I would be picking these berries and you would just keep eating them because they were warm off the vine. Like, a raspberry that is warm off the vine is like one of my favorite kind of childhood summer memories. It just tastes like jam, and like you can smell the raspberry leaves in the air, and it's just this big system at work. I guess doing that job for my parents and like realizing that I was eating half of what I was picking, I think that was a defining moment where the connection kind of started, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we always ate vegetables at home. Like, with dinner, we always had at-home family dinners every night. Like, it was, I don't know, like, farm-to-table was just this thing that was a part of our life, and like there was no language for it. Like it was just there. It was the way we lived. But the raspberry thing is, it sticks out in my mind big time.
Yeah. Well, see, and you know what? In a way, I expected there to be no defining aha moment, because that's what I said before. It's just a part of you. And so I loved that you reaffirmed that. And the memory of the raspberries is so beautiful. I mean, I have similar memories. Of course, I was obsessed about checking for bugs first.
Yeah.
I would like inspect it, look inside, make sure there's no bug, and then I would eat them.
Oh no, I definitely remember eating bugs by accident. Like, bunch is like unmistakable and horrifying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you clearly knew then that your path was entangled with food pretty early on.
I think so.
I mean, especially since you chose to form your career around that by going to culinary school and then working in restaurants. So what were those experiences like? Did they inform your current cooking style, or did you develop that later on your own?
I would say those experiences were a relief, first of all. Like, I had come to culinary school and restaurant work after attending university and getting my degree, and like realizing that it just wasn't for me. But I think with my cooking style, like, I found the culinary school I attended, it was a George Brown College in Toronto. It was a nutrition specific culinary management program. They still would teach you, you know, like weights and measures and the math and like butchering and all those basic techniques. You still got nutrition classes and things. I think it laid a very good foundation for knowing how to avoid hiccups with recipe development and things like that. Like, it just, I don't know, like, if you don't want your food to stick in a pan, make sure the oil is like boiling hot before you put the food in. Like, just basic things like that that I remember. It was, I think I kind of developed the style more after school. And like, I mean, I was working in a variety of restaurants after that. When I was attending school, I was working at, for a really well-known farm-to-table chef in Canada, Jamie Kennedy.
I was
working as a server at Gilead, and just being in that environment was so inspiring. Like, I wasn't even making food, and I was so inspired. Like, it's just everyone there is so committed to that philosophy of using what is available and doing it creatively, with a nod of respect to what we have here and how lucky we are. Like, that learning environment, and it was a working environment, but it felt more like a learning environment, that gave me so much. Like, just to really think about creatively using what is available in that time, and to think about seasons like as this fleeting life cycle. Like, you really have to seize the moment with certain crops and like really just give it everything. I think, like, obviously that kind of food is a little different than what I make, because like in the winter it's pretty meat heavy, dairy heavy, that kind of stuff. Yeah, but in terms of my style, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I would always buy the gourmet magazines in high school when gourmet was around. I was always like watching Food Network at a time when it was just food cooking shows, less of the reality stuff like it is now. And like, I just over time was just playing with stuff, and you figure out what you really like and like what works for you. And I don't know, it's always evolving. I never say I have like a set out style. I think it always changes. Like, it's, I'm always trying to grow and make things better. And like, I don't know, I never want to stick to a certain thing. I always want to be trying something new, you know?
Yes, of course. It makes a lot of sense that you were somehow involved with Jamie Kennedy. I love Gilead. It's such an amazing place to eat.
I was working there. It was great.
And I can hear in your voice, I can hear the passion that you have for what you do. It's incredible. So at this point, you know, you said you've made yourself comfortable with the way that you cook, and you said before that your style is always evolving, but at this point in time, how would you describe your style, and what is your food philosophy?
Well, my food philosophy is also always evolving, but I think you just have to consume and eat what your body and mind craves. Like, there's nothing wrong with having like a beer and a cookie for dinner, if that You know, like, I mean, I've been there. Like, I always try to have, you know, greens in a day and, like, have a healthy starch and stuff like that. But sometimes you just have to allow yourself the wiggle room. Like, if you, like, if you're just too tired, it's okay to have, like, pizza. Like, I am the biggest proponent of pizza and beer. I try to eat healthy. Obviously, you can see this on my site and my Instagram and everything. Like, I try to eat really well. And I think just what guides that is, for me, recalling a moment when I feel my best, like my most vibrant, my most energetic, and like my most kind, and how my eating patterns have figured into that. Like, when I eat really well, I feel amazing. So when I'm faced with that issue of like, oh, should I skip lunch because I'm too busy working? I just try to remember how amazing I felt in that moment. And that guides my decision. I think that's my food philosophy. Like, I just always remember how good I'm going to feel. And that will help me choose what I'm going to eat in that moment. And then if I really need comfort food and like the more traditional sense, like the not as virtuous food, I allow that to myself. And I know I'll always get back on track, but I don't know. Yeah, like that's, it sounds kind of vague, but like that's just how, you know, to make food choices, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. It's not vague at all. Because, you know, in a way, I'm glad you said all that stuff, because as an outsider looking in, you know, someone who reads your blog regularly, you know, I think in my mind, I'm just like, oh my goodness, Laura is so good. Like, she's so on it, you know, all the time. Yeah. And your recipes are amazing and so healthful and all of that. But, you know, it's nice to hear you say that sometimes it's okay to indulge or slip off a little bit because it's just life. Yeah.
It's normal. It's like, I mean, you can't see it as bad food. Like, it's all food and it's all good. And, you know, you can just eat a salad tomorrow. Like, it's fine. Yeah.
Right. Well, exactly. And I think, too, I mean, there's a big difference between a store-bought pizza and a homemade pizza. I think that you're still getting a lot out of a homemade pizza, so it's not like...
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. And I mean, we make pizza a lot, but I order in, too. Like, I just, you know, like, sometimes you have that craving, and, like, nothing's going to get in my way. Like, nothing, but...
Well, I know. There's a local place where I am that makes some pretty good pizza. So every, you know, twice a year or something like that, we do that. Yeah. Or sometimes more, it depends. Like right now, we're renovating, and it was sort of a little intentional but unintentional. I mean, renovations just have a bad habit of running off.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
So times like this, we might be frequenting the pizza place a little more. But anyway, it makes it so much, you know, very approachable. And so that's really nice to know. And I loved what you said about feeling amazing. And in fact, I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later on.
Okay.
But there's a photo of you on your website looking really fine in a garden. Uh-huh. It looks like you're at home there. So is that your garden?
That's my parents' house.
Okay.
My dad's garden, which is amazing. Like, he is, like, both of my parents are amazing at gardening. Like, my dad wore on the vegetable end, and my mom is, like, a whiz with flowers and, like, native perennials and stuff. Like, she knows when things will flower. Her garden is the best I've ever seen in my life. And I'm not just saying that because she's my mom. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
My dad's vegetable garden is so tidy and beautiful. Like, half of it is raspberry canes. There's a big old apple tree in the middle of it. He planted that apple tree around the time. All right, I think when we moved to that house, he planted that apple tree, and that was my brother's. And then when I came into the family, he planted a plum tree for me.
Aww.
I know, the plum tree's gone because, like, all in Niagara, all the plum trees got plum pox like a couple years ago. But it's that firm connection to the earth, right? Like, it's just so inspiring. He plants like these rows and rows of kale and tomatoes and like beans, and he takes such good care of it. It's all organically done. Like, he just has a awareness with what's going on. He knows what to do. So that picture on my site is there, and I'm just, you know, picking the fruits of his labor there. But I have at my house now, he came over last summer and just rooted up all this, like, one big patch of dirt for me to have my vegetable garden. And I did pretty good with it this year. Like, he has a lot of guidance and things like that. But, I mean, I can't do it as big as him. I don't have as big of a property. But I feel like I have a natural inclination towards it because of him and my mom. Like, it's kind of, it's crazy to see how the plants just start flourishing. And you feel like, oh, I'm just watering them or whatever. But a lot of people have a hard time with it. Like, I don't know. But I love it. I can't wait for spring and to get out there again and, like, start feeling that dirt again. I can't wait.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing to do for sure. I have a garden too, and it's sort of like you. My mom has this beautiful garden. I have to admit, I noticed in the picture how weed-free that garden looked, and that I was impressed. But and my mom she's the whiz with the garden, and hers always looks so beautiful and orderly, and I just feel so peaceful there. And then I come home to mine, and I'm like, oh,
city. I have patches of that too.
Yeah, but it's nice to have her to learn from, just like you have your dad. So that's really nice. So what food do you wait for all year to come into season?
Oh, I feel like I wait for all of them.
I know.
Really love the first lettuce in spring. That is my favorite thing. It tastes like it has such a rich minerality kind of flavor, like a whetstone kind of thing. Oh, I love it so much. It tastes so fresh. In the summer, I love tomatoes, and doesn't everyone? Like, they're so good. And figs in the fall, like the Ontario figs, I really enjoy those. And peaches, like, there's nothing like Niagara peaches. Like, they're so juicy and delicious. I, like, eat, I think, 5 a day when they're in season. Like, I just can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
But I love that, your description of the whetstone for the lettuce. That's so awesome. Yeah. It's right. You're true. And so true. And I mean, with you living in Niagara, I mean, whenever I visit there, I feel like I'm in a different country. You're so lucky to live there. There's so much. And, you know, I'm only a couple hours away, but we don't have that at all.
It's very fertile. Like, it's just a layer of topsoil is much more dense. So the roots can really flourish underneath the soil. At least that's when I worked at one winery a couple of years ago, and they were explaining that to us, where they were particularly located. The vines established quickly just because of, like, the abundance of topsoil. Like, there's not, like, the clay is so much further down, right? But we're so lucky here, like, with the wine industry and everything. It's, like, unbelievable to me.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I think as well, the fact that proximity to the lake, you have a nice little microclimate there, which helps too.
My dad always called it the banana belt.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. So this is a related question to my last one. What is your favorite food? Is it even possible to choose one when you're you?
It's so hard to pick. I like everything. Like, I really do like everything. I think my stock answer is always pizza. I'm going to go pizza. I'll probably go back to pizza like 5 more times in this interview. I think pizza is my favorite. I love making it at home when we have, like, the barbecue going in the warm weather, because you can, like, crank it to, like, at really high temperatures, and it just cooks perfectly on the grate. I love pizza. I love homemade pasta. That's really special to me. Like, I think the effort is really worth it there. All my favorite foods are kind of carby. That's what I like.
Isn't everyone?
I think everybody has fond memories of carb kind of focused foods. But I'd have to say those two are definitely my favorite.
Yeah, I'm with you. So let's talk. I'd love to dive into your processes around cooking a little bit. So where do you find your inspiration other than, you know, just the bounty of the seasons? And then what does developing a recipe look like for you?
Beyond the season, I am, like, I'm a big fan of the Vegetarian Flavor Bible by Karen Page and Andrew Dornenberg. I really love that book. Sometimes when I'm thinking about a certain ingredient, I look at the chapter. If nobody's, like, seen the book before, it's basically they take every vegetarian ingredient really that you could think of, any vegetable, spice, nut, seed, whatever. And then they have lists of optimal pairings in terms of flavor, texture, et cetera, under each kind of food chapter, if you will. So I flipped through that quite a bit when I kind of stuck on something just to put together. Other than that, I just think about like what cravings I have. Like I had a post recently, it was a kale and Brussels sprout Caesar salad. And I mean, I always liked Caesar salad when I was younger, but then, you know, I became more discerning when I got older and like, I'm not really a fan of like the egg-based dressing as much anymore. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, how can I work around this? How can I make this seasonally appropriate? Because, like, I don't love a romaine or, like, a crunchy, like, water-heavy lettuce this time of year. Because, like, the lettuce isn't really available. And it's just, it makes you feel cold afterwards, right? Like, yeah. How can I do this with kind of a more winter-appropriate green? What's the dressing going to be like there? And, like, sometimes I refer to the traditional food that I'm after, like Caesar salad dressing, like what's going to give it that anchovy flavor, that sort of thing. But it's always what I come up with for recipe development is just in flavor combinations that I know I like, that I think really work, with some help from the Flavor Bible for sure. Another good one is the Flavor Thesaurus. I think that's a British book. I'm not totally sure, but it's excellent. I think about like technique I learned in culinary school and like what's going to be best for a certain ingredient. Like some ingredients need really high heat because they take a long time to grow and they do better with that. And I don't know, it just kind of comes from there. And like sometimes when we're doing something at the restaurant that I really like, I don't want to say I like directly rip it off, but the technique that they use are like, they cut the vegetable a certain way so that it absorbs the sauce or a dressing more. I'm inspired by that. Or when they have like a certain process that takes a long time, when they figure out a way to kind of push that forward in a faster way, I try to do that in my kitchen too. But I just, everything, like I feel inspired by nature, what I'm working on. Sometimes like recipes I'm developing inspire like another recipe that I'll work on in the future. Like I have sticky notes all over my desk of like what I'm going to make. And some of the notes are like really ambiguous. Like I have one on my desk right now that says cut out cookies shaped like pizza. And I'm like, I'm mentioning pizza again.
And I love your thoughts on the Caesar salad too. I recently had one that, now this isn't seasonally appropriate, in the summer it would be, but where they made a Caesar dressing over top of like al dente green beans, like string beans, and then fried lentils as the like crouton.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, now there was still bacon on it, but still, I mean, it was good, so good.
I love, you know, like lentils and chickpeas and pulses and stuff, when they get like roasted or fried, like they have that meaty texture. It's so delicious.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned the restaurant briefly. Do you work at a restaurant currently?
I do. So Jamie Kennedy opened, I lived in Toronto for about 7 years and I was working at JK's restaurant for the last like 2-ish to 3 years. And then I moved back to the region, like the Niagara region. And within a year, Jamie Kennedy opened a restaurant in Niagara Falls. And it was like in kind of the tourism area, which is unusual to think that you can have like a front table restaurant there. I don't know if you've been to Niagara Falls. Can you hear my dog in the background barking?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. It's okay.
But anyways, it's kind of weird to think that like you can have a front table restaurant in Niagara Falls because it's kind of like a kind of tacky like tourist mecca now, even though it is so beautiful. Like the falls are really lovely. But anyway, so he has a farm table restaurant in one of the hotels in Niagara Falls, and I work there as a server, and it's great. Like he comes to visit us down there a few times, and it's still like that kind of philosophy that I enjoy so much. And I mean, we do things differently than he would in Toronto, but it's still like, I'm definitely, the guys who work there are like at the top of their game. They're really creative. Like they just, for them, and I guess for people who are inclined towards cooking professionally, when you ask them, like, oh, how did you do that? They're like, oh, well, I just threw this together. Yeah. Like, it's always so ambiguous, right? But I feel like I have a decent handle on it when they tell me that. But some things they do, I find, like, really interesting. Like, I can't think of an exact example, but I just, yeah, like everything they do there, and like the way they combine certain seasonal things as they come in, it's really interesting to me, especially when they're like serving a really particular clientele. Like, it's some of the choices they make are kind of bold, but they always pay off. Like, it's really inspiring.
I didn't realize that. You're still associated with Jamie. That's awesome. So then do you ever see an opportunity to work in the kitchen, or
you don't really want to? I don't. Like, when I came out of culinary school, I did work in kitchens a little bit, and it was fine. Like, I had no problem with it. I have no problem with late hours. Obviously, I'm a server, so I know, like, that's not a big deal to me. The workload doesn't bother me at all. It's just, for me, like, with the photography and recipe development work and stuff like that, I like serving because I could still be around the whole culture of the restaurant, but I have my days free to pursue the other stuff. Like, it's a better match for me.
Yeah,
like, it just works better. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, restaurant jobs are, those are long, long hours. I mean, I know I'm intimately familiar.
Yeah, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
But I never complain about that. It's just for the path I want my career to take. This is working out a lot better for me. So then
you're moving more and more towards doing what you do for the blog, more full time.
Yeah, I would say so. I only work at the restaurant probably like 1 to 2 nights a week, especially because we're not that busy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, less over time has been less and less. So.
Yeah, it's hard to walk away from that tip money though, isn't it?
You know, just having cash flow is to walk away. Like, I know a lot of people my age with degrees and like good experience, and like, just to walk away from that cash is really hard.
Yeah, I know. So let's talk about your blog for a little bit.
Sure.
You've received some beautiful accolades and serious recognition now. So what was the inspiration to start blogging? How long have you been doing it?
The inspiration to start, when I moved back from Toronto to Niagara, I kind of like was flip-flopping on jobs. Like, I didn't really hold anything down in a permanent way for a while. So I had extra time on my hands. And a friend of mine, she had been like texting me and asking me about certain like cooking techniques and like, how do I prepare this seasonal kind of item? Can I eat the greens off of radishes? And she would like text me these questions. And then I would tell her, and then she would follow that up with a, this is why you need to start a blog, so I don't have to, like, bother you about this anymore. She wasn't bothering me at all. But, so eventually I was like, okay, I have some time on my hands. I'm going to do this. I'll start the blog. And I was not, like, scheduling my posts. It's just if I felt like making something, I put it up. Like, in the beginning, I think sometimes I was doing 2 posts a week. And I just, you know what I mean? I put it out there, and like for a while, I think it was just my friend and my mother reading it. Yeah. And, you know, but that's the case with every food blogger. Like, it just kind of starts that way. And then now I think I've had the blog for 3 years. I can't remember. I think I started in 2011. So I'm going on 4 years this year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that's just how it started. Like, my friend thought it would be cool, and she kept pushing me to do it, and I'm so glad she did, because it kind of brought me a very interesting career that I find pretty satisfying so far. So
yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, aren't you glad that she made you do it? So there's a little story behind the name of your blog, The First Mess. It's a beautiful story or idea. I'm not sure which you would call it, but can you share it?
Yes. So it's from a passage in MFK Fisher's Alphabet for Gourmets, or it's called An Alphabet for Gourmets. And under the entry of P, which is she says the first thing, she has a like multiples under certain letters, but she says for the letter P, it says P is for peas, like fresh peas in spring. And she kind of elaborates on how no crop is held in greater anticipation than the first peas of spring. And she talks about how her grandmother would plant staggered rows over the course of a few weeks so that they would have fresh peas like as soon as possible, but also follow-up weeks and weeks of them. And she recalls, you know, shelling them, and she calls them the first mess of peas, and just how excited everyone is for their arrival, because it means spring is truly here. It's another growing season. It's another several months of fresh food that we can grow ourselves. Like, it's, I think I liked, like, I loved how it sounded, but also it points to that, like, self-capability, like that feeding yourself and having that excitement for doing it yourself. I thought that was always so appealing to me. And also just the word mess, like, just, it points to, like, just, you know, good, honest food. It just, it's not come by in a pretentious or a highly thought of way. It's just, it's real and it's there and we're all going to eat it together. And it just, it had all the right connotations to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a great name. And I also love the first mess, because for me, what it conjures up is those early days of learning how to cook when it is a mess.
Totally
and
a mess.
You've never seen a kitchen so messy as when you're first learning, and that clean as you go thing isn't even, you know, so I love that for, you know, your name for so many reasons, but I love the story behind behind MFK Fisher and how she inspired you. So obviously she was a big influence on you. So just for those that might not know, her full name is Mary Frances Kennedy Fisher. She was a preeminent American food writer, born in 1908 and died in 1992. And to me, I think that in many ways, her writing sort of paved the way for this massive movement of female food writers or bloggers that we have now. So in what ways has she inspired you most?
I think just reading her work was always like, she talked about food in a way that was so elegant, but so relatable. And like, even like some of the more like brute things like butchering and things like that, she would talk about them so frankly. You had so much respect for her. Like, I don't just learning to discuss food and like not sound, how do I say this? Like, not using language that's unavailable, you know, like not glamorizing food. Like, just, it's something that comes from the earth. It's like a accessibility kind of thing that she shows in her writing. Like, it's just, it's there for all of us. I always related to that. And I find you're right that, like, she definitely, her writings and her approach paved the way for a lot of, like, bloggers in that community. And, like, I mean, I'm going to assume you've read Tamar Adler's Everlasting Meal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, I find her style is really similar to MFK's. And, like, I mean, I've seen, like, her articles I look forward to in the New York Times so much. Mm-hmm. I think she definitely set things up for a more realistic appreciation of fine living. Like, it's just, fine living isn't this thing that's like white tablecloths and like, you know, the best, most expensive wine from wherever. Like, it's just, it's what you can make yourself and what you have the time for if you just try to learn something simple.
Yes, I mean, it's that whole idea of really appreciating where something comes from, the journey, the path to where it's at now. You know, that's everything from the growing, the sprouting, the seeds to harvesting it, nurturing it, cooking with it. I mean, without really, you know, that to me, like you said, that's the key to fine living, because once you can appreciate those, it just adds this richness that you can't get. I mean, money can't buy that, right? So it's,
I think it's just, it's connectedness, right?
Like, exactly.
Being connected is really true fine living.
Yep, truly. So from the time you wrote your first post to now, what has been the evolution of the first mess? So like your biggest learning curve and your most significant triumph and things like that.
The biggest learning curve is like trying to put yourself out there. Like, I always thought, I was like, oh, people will just, you know, Google something and they'll just come to my site by accident. But you have to really make that effort and like reach out to the community. And like, the blogging community is amazing. Like, everybody's so receptive and lovely, and everyone's just happy to be creating something. And like, I don't know, I think it's the biggest, like, just to refocus on that, like, just being proud enough of your work and confident enough in your work to put it out there, I think is the biggest thing. And to just like shamelessly be yourself on your site. Like, that's always like, you know, you don't have to like be all sunshine and roses when you talk on your blog, I don't think. Like, I think people appreciate when you are honest about your life and like how you came by a certain dish because, you know, maybe you weren't feeling great about something. I mean, there's a certain point where it's like TMI, but I think learning that I could just talk about, you know, even if your life is like kind of boring, you can talk about that and like people relate. Like that was a big learning curve for me. Like I thought if I just elegantly described the food and I was like, okay, have a great day, like people would be more into that. But like they aren't necessarily. And I mean, I think people just want to relate. And I mean, you know, they want to eat well and they're interested in that. But in terms of a voice and like growing your audience, like everybody has these certain moments that aren't ideal. And I think recognizing that and kind of just sharing that in a way that's authentic is really, it's reassuring to people, right? Like it makes them feel comfortable. And in terms of like greatest triumph or achievement, when I get like an email from a reader saying they've tried a bunch of my recipes and their like meat loving partner was like so into it, that's my favorite thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like a woman once told me her husband had to have like bacon or meat as part of every meal, like absolutely had to. And she told me she made something from my site and he says, I would never feel deprived eating this. Like that's the coolest thing to me. Or that somebody like made one of my soup recipes when they were sick and they felt really nourished by it. Like I love that stuff. Like that means a lot more to me than traffic numbers and everything. Like, I mean, that's all I really, like, originally that's why I never did it to, like, make money. It was always just to kind of relate and share these things that I've learned, and I don't by any means know everything about cooking healthy, but it's just, you know, if somebody can learn one little thing from my site, I think that is great. If they learn one little thing that kind of makes their life a little better, or one thing that they think is really great, I think that's awesome. That's all I want.
That's what I love about you, Laura. You're just so approachable and authentic in every way. I love that. So that was awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And so did your traffic and all of that, I know you just said that you don't really focus on that part of it, but did you find that it just kind of grew organically as you found your voice and especially as you hit your stride, you know, talking about things in a more real way and realizing that that was okay?
I think the first, like, you know, honestly, I think I started like commenting on other blogs and like noticing that other people were finding my blog. And then the first time I noticed like my traffic actually growing was when I did a guest post for the Happy Oats blog, which I'm sure you know. Kelsey and Sean, their work is so great. I did a guest post for Kelsey's blog and I noticed like there was definitely a traffic spike. And then more people in the blogging community that I'm still very friendly with started visiting my site and commenting. And then it just kind of my community got in terms of bloggers got bigger and also closer at the same time. And then from there, when I kind of noticed that more people were going to my site, I started trying a bit harder, trying to like write something that wasn't as like fluffy and like, you know what I mean though, right?
Yeah, yes, I do.
Definitely like trying a bit harder. And then here and there, a recipe would be picked up by the website The Kitchen or Food 52 or like BuzzFeed or whatever. And then Pinterest, around that time, Pinterest became this huge phenomenon where like every food blogger's traffic spiked. Like, and I mean, it's still the number one source of traffic to my site for sure. But it just, more people were seeing my site and then pinning the stuff. And then like some of the more food media sites would pick up stuff because of this. And it just kind of grew organically. Like I can't pinpoint a time where traffic was like just got crazy huge and I had way more followers and then it just forever changed. Like it's just always a slow build. It's always been a slow build for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like anything, though. Once that momentum starts to build, it just happens faster and faster.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And how long ago was it that you contributed to Kelsey's blog? I mean, Kelsey and Sean have been contributors to the magazine.
Yeah.
And boy, I mean, I admire them. They're amazing.
I got to meet them when I was in Denver not 2014, 2013. I got to meet them. It was lovely. I think, when did that happen? I feel like it was in the first year I was blogging.
Oh, really? I didn't realize.
Yeah.
Huh. For some reason, I didn't realize that Kelsey's blog has been around that long.
Yeah.
They're so great. I hope to have Kelsey on the podcast too.
Yeah, you got to do that. You have to.
Yeah.
That would be
yeah. All right. So, I'm going to wind down a little bit now. So just the last couple of questions for you. So what's been the most significant thing that you've learned? So maybe a little wisdom to share with other aspiring bloggers.
Just in terms of blogging?
Yeah, or actually cooking too, or one or the other, whatever.
The most significant thing I have learned through blogging and like what is received very well and that kind of thing is like sometimes when I make a recipe, I put so much like effort into it. And I'm like, well, what would I do if I did this flavor combination? Maybe I should test this cake another time. And like you can spend so many hours on something and you think you have like the highest class, the highest high vibe, coolest thing ever. And like, you know, the comments are kind of lackluster. Like it's just not, you put all that work in and then one post where I make something that I make all the time that's just easy and off the cuff, and I didn't really have a lot of time that week, so this is what I made for my blog, that will be so popular, it's ridiculous. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. I think the most important thing for me that I've learned is to think about approachability and accessibility first and always. Like, I think about taste, you know, like how it's going to satisfy me that way, that's really important to me, but just, you know, like, I have a really well-equipped kitchen, and I love it, and I'm so grateful for that. But sometimes, you know, I think back to basics, and, like, maybe somebody's just working with, like, a little, like, a countertop kind of hot pot heater, and they got one pot, and, like, that's how they're making dinner. Like, I always try to go back to that if I'm getting too ornate, too complex, too many steps. I think that's been just simplifying has been very valuable for me. It's really easy. It's like alarmingly easy to make food and preparation and photography of it too, really complex. Like it's so easy to go there. And it takes, I think, more forethought and more consideration to really simplify and make something that's going to satisfy all senses, like your, you know what I mean? Like your aesthetic sense, your taste, your health. It takes a lot more work to like think of something simple that will satisfy those things. So that's mm-hmm. been my biggest lesson. Like that really keeps me grounded in terms of what I'm making, and it keeps me in check for sure.
That really makes sense actually to me, because, you know, people don't often have the time to put into something that looks complicated, or at least they feel like they don't. On paper, it can often be more complex than it really is. But, you know, so just having that something that's really good, really easy and simple and fast is, yeah, it's nice. And it's funny because my husband, Jonathan, who's the food editor for Pure Green, he feels that way a lot. He's like, this is too simple. We can't publish this.
Yeah.
It's too simple. But I'm like, no, people will love it. Readers will love it because of that. And it's so, yeah, there's always room for both. But I mean, you're so right in that way. And actually, you mentioned photography as well. And I had a mental note to ask you about that. So where did you learn to take pictures? Was it just through trial and error? Did you sort of have someone that you learned from?
It's mostly trial and error. Like I had a digital SLR when I started. It was kind of like an entry level one. Mm-hmm. And I started just way before I was blogging. I started using it, and I would like use it with like automatic settings. And then I would change it to, like, I'm going to set the aperture setting. And then now, you know, obviously I'm, like, full manual mm-hmm. settings and that kind of thing, like, so I can be in control. But I think I just, it's a learning curve over time. Like, you especially with digital, it makes it so easy. Like, right away, you know what works and what doesn't. Like, that's what I love about technology and the age we live in. Like, your ability, like, you can greatly heighten your abilities so fast. Like, it's all there for the taking, you know? And, like, the digital age makes it so easy. There's so many resources online for photography and, like, food blogger-specific resources online, like how to take really good pictures of food and things like that. I don't know. It's always gradually developing, and I'm still learning so many new things. There's so many amazing photographers and, like, the blog kind of community. Like, I learn things from just looking at my friends' blogs and things like that. But yeah, like, I never had any formal training or anything like that.
Well, your pictures are gorgeous, and you're so right in terms of that digital age and being the diversity and the depth of, you know, of learning that you can access through a few keystrokes.
It's yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're, you know, that abundance of photography like Pinterest and all of that, I mean, it's a definitely a help, but it can also be a hindrance. I mean, I think people have to remember not to compare themselves. That's something I do way too much.
I think that's, like, the most like potent overarching lesson of blogging overall. I just never,
yeah.
You know, you're always like, good for them, not for me. Like, it's too, like, just accentuate your own strengths, never compare, celebrate, never compare, never.
Yes, exactly. It's a hard lesson, though.
It is. You know,
yeah.
While, it takes a long time.
It does. And actually, that leads nicely into my next question, which is, you know, I often like to ask those that I admire who are successful in their unique ways, but what strategies they use to succeed. And their excellent strategy is what I call it. So I read this on your latest post, which speaks to that, I think. So my thing this year, these are your words, is just recalling or finding those moments where I've been so excited to just live and feel like my own optimal self. And then just hanging on to that elated goodness with everything I've got. That recollection process keeps my priorities and choices for wellness in check. So what a beautiful statement. I admire that because it makes you sound comfortable in your own skin and realize that you are enough. And that's just plain hard to do. So what are you doing to help yourself achieve this? So, like, daily habits or processes or whatever.
So I kind of mentioned that earlier with my dietary stuff. And I kind of say that in that quote that you read. I just, you know, I try with my success in my career and, like, just my life, too. I try, if I'm having a trying moment, like, one where I'm just like, oh, my work will never be as good as XYZ. I just remember a point, and, like, it happens to everyone, especially if you're creative. Like, you always have those moments. I just try to remember a point in my career, in my life, where I really loved myself. Like, I was really proud of myself, and, like, maybe I was being, you know, extra patient, or I achieved, like, a career milestone, or I was extra compassionate in a really challenging moment. I just try to remember that, and I really hang on to it, and it brings you back into the present. It kind of refocuses your priority. Like, you kind of remember there's bigger things at stake if you just really get a handle on how much you can love yourself and be proud of yourself. I think you'll do better. Like, I think anybody who is creative has self-doubt moments all the time. You just have to try really hard to remember those good things. And it keeps you in the light, I think. But in terms of, like, just everyday kind of stuff that helps me, like, push my career forward and, like, just my better version of myself forward, I'm using the Headspace app to keep up meditating. I think that's really helping me. They're not paying me to shout them out. I really like it. Like, it's a really good app. It kind of keeps me on point. Like, I'm going 6 days straight using it now. But, like, I mean, I tried in the new year and then kind of fell off, and then I'm back. And, like, I'm fine with that. Like, it's just, you have to accept it. So I find that very helpful. Taking, like, technology breaks, I find, is really crucial to any success I have. Like, just knowing when to pull back and not look at a screen for, like, 24 hours, I think gives you a lot of perspective. I think if you're a creative person and your career, your livelihood relies on your being creative, it just time away from all of that, like, in nature, just, you know, being lazy and, like, or whatever, like, whatever it takes. I think you just need rest time more than anything else. Like, it really regenerates your creativity. It can really get the fire going again, I think. And sometimes if I'm in the middle of a project that I'm finding like really difficult and I'm really struggling with, or I'm like, I'm just hating it, I will take a break and I'll either come back more inspired to work at it harder, or I'll realize that it's not worth it and I'll quit entirely. Like, mm-hmm. I think I cannot speak more highly to time away from computer screens and just knowing when to take a break from the work when it's starting to consume you.
Yeah, I love that. It's so true. And, you know, what you said before about, you know, recalling those moments where you felt really great and amazing. I mean, I think that's an incredible skill, and it's something that doesn't come naturally to us for some reason. Like, you know, when someone says 10 positive things to you and then they say one negative thing, or it's like many people,
exactly.
And you forget about the 10 positive things, even though that's literally, that's like 10 to 1 or, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you focus on that one negative thing, and I think your emotions are a lot like that. You know, elation and happiness and joy is sometimes very fleeting, and then that broodiness, just the nature of that word, you just sit there in that space. And so I think that's an awesome life skill that you've identified first and then acted on.
Well, I think, like, the meditation really helps with that. And, like, just, you know, like, getting exercise and being outside helps with that a lot more. Like, I know in the winter it's so hard, but, like, I mean, the more I am, like, stuck in my house or stuck somewhere doing work, the less connected I am, and, like, the harder it is to go to those really jubilant places. Like, I don't want to, you know, it's not a struggle for me at all. Like, I find, like, I'm a really happy person, but, like, it's just, I think, allowing yourself that time to just go outside and do what you want. It makes it a lot easier to, like, recall those really happy moments when you're challenged.
Yeah, definitely. I'm lucky to live somewhere where we have lots of snow, and in fact, I'm just so grateful for that, because in some ways I find the cold even more effective. You step outside and it's like this clean break.
It's
like, it just strips it all away within a second, and then it's awesome. So I snowshoe a lot, and I used to cross country ski every day, but now that I have a toddler, it's harder.
It's hard.
But we'll get back to it when she's a little older. Yeah. So what's next for you, Laura?
I'm just doing more recipe development projects for a few people. And I have one, like, really big creative project that I'm going to be starting very soon. It'll probably take up, like, at least a year of my time. I'm really excited about it. I'm going to be talking about it on the blog really soon, I think.
Oh, that's exciting. So we'll have to definitely, just a cue to listeners to stay tuned.
I cannot believe I have kept it secret enough so far. Like, it's all I want to talk about. It's like all I've been really, like, kind of working on since, like, prior to the holidays. But soon, it's killing me. I hate keeping it secret.
I'll have you back on when you can talk about it.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, and congratulations, by the way. It sounds like it's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for you. So what's the best social media network to connect with you if listeners wanted to reach out?
Email. If you want, like, more elaborate reaching out, email is the best. It's laura@thefirstmess.com. And then in terms of, like, social media that I'm on most frequently that is, like, easier to get at me with is Instagram. Like, I love Instagram so much. I don't know. Yeah. Like, Twitter is fine. Facebook, like, kind of annoys me a bit, but Instagram, like, reach out to me on there, and I am so excited. I'm really into the visual world and everything that's happening on there. There's a lot of cool stuff. So
that's my favorite.
I love it.
So in parting then, Laura, what would you say to others seeking to live healthfully, to eat great food, to embrace the vitality that you've found in the kitchen? What would your words be to them?
Listen to yourself. That's it. Like, just really listen to yourself and think, just try to think about what the goal in mind. I think always with healthy eating and things like that, if I'm having a weak moment where I want something that may not be the best for me, I just think about the end goal. And I mean, that's with career wise too. Like, you think about the end result, what you want, what you're asking for. And for me, it's optimal, vibrant wellness and just like feeling amazing, and like so that I can be present to my career and my family and people I love. If you have that in mind, that good intention, the action will always follow. Always follow. Like, I always leave room for like forgiving myself for those indulgences. And I don't even see it as forgiving myself. It's just like me, that's what I want. Like, just keep the end goal in mind. If you're trying to really clean up your eating and your lifestyle, just think about what you want and what you're asking for, and the action will always follow.
I love that. Thank you so much, Laura, for being part of the podcast. I really, really enjoyed my talk with you.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is lovely.
So that concludes my talk with Laura. Are you suitably inspired? Are you running to the kitchen to cook something? That's certainly what I feel like doing. Don't forget, you can review the show notes over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Laura. We put a lot of time into summarizing the interview and adding timestamps so that you can re-listen to any part that you felt was especially impactful. I'm going to ask you a teensy favor as well. If you enjoyed today's episode, please go over to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a rating for the show. It's the biggest and nicest way you can show your support, and it helps us grow. It really makes a difference in helping more listeners discover the podcast. If you've already left a review, then thank you very much. I really appreciate your feedback. This podcast is created by Pure Green Magazine. Go to puregreenmag.com to get a copy of our latest issue or to subscribe. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.